It's not often that a father follows in the footsteps of a daughter, but you'll hear that story and others from poets Willis and Aleke Barnstone. Willis is probably best known for his numerous translations of literary works from Greek, Spanish, Chinese, and several other languages. Aleke, a professor at the University of Missouri-Columbia, who was named the Missouri Poet Laureate in June 2016, talks about the influence of her father's interest, from the Beatles to his 21st century biblical translations, particularly on her book of new and selected poems, Dear God, Dear Dr. Heartbreak.
While I was writing these poems in 2005 and 2006, my dad had already released The New Covenant, which is the first four Gospels and Revelations or the Apocalypse. And so I was highly influenced by his translations of the New Testament.
Discover how the creative forces of Aleke and her father, Willis Barnstone, intertwine today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine, which has published both of their works here at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. Willis Barnstone was born in Maine in 1927, but grew up in New York City and began his world travels at an early age, which is how his addiction to foreign languages began. This scholar and poet married a Greek visual artist and had three children. Two of them are poets, Aleke and her younger brother, Tony Barnstone. Back in 1977, New Letters Magazine published one of their first father-daughter collaborations, a villanelle called Hallways.
At night, I follow an electric line of tubes that fill up with a sullen glare, and all the emptiness I fill is mine. Elevators shriek in their greasy mine. I don't know how to slip from this nightmare at night. I follow an electric line to the stairwell and look into the shine of marble darkness on the bottom stair, and all the emptiness I fill is mine.
No one is here. The lounges have a pine tree smell. The janitors have waxed the air. At night, I follow an electric line. The walls are bright and burn like iodine. I wander light like dust under a chair, and all the emptiness I fill is mine. The desert floors glow under a confine of stars. I'm at the window, go nowhere. At night, I follow an electric line, and all the emptiness I fill is mine.
That is a very old poem that was published in New Letters back in 1977, and it's by both Willis and Aleke Barnstone. And I thought, okay, Aleke was pretty young then.
20 or 21.
When you wrote this. So can you remember what brought you together to write this poem?
Yeah. I was at Brown University, and then in 1976, what would have been my junior year, I took three semesters off from college, and my father and I edited a book of women poets from antiquity to now. The first edition came out in 80, and the second edition came out in 92. We were doing a lot of translating together, and Dad at the time was writing collaborative poems with Matei Kalinescu and Ruth Stone, and Reza Berhany, a wonderful Iranian poet. So Dad and I just sat down and wrote two villanelles together. It's actually a very accurate portrait of Ballantyne Hall, which is kind of a huge classroom office building, and not the nicest building in the whole world, but we spent a lot of time there, right, Dad?
Should we call it an arts prison?
It's a nine-story building, and you know.
It's called enlightened Soviet style.
It was a Cold War building,
yes,
for sure.
It was.
Usually when you have parents and the children who are doing similar type things, there's always this breaking away from that. What brought you guys together to do that anthology?
Bribery? No, we love doing it together. Aleke was very enthusiastic. I must tell you that when the book came out, Aleke's big picture was in Time magazine, got the lead review, and it was one of the recommended books that Time in those days recommended for 7 months straight. And we were sadly lucky because John Lennon was killed the week it came out, so that instead of selling 11.5 million copies, it sold 13.5 million.
The cover of that Time magazine has a drawing of John Lennon, and the headline on the cover is "The Day the Music Died." It was a kind of strange, tragic, synchronous thing.
Aliki's first book came out when she was 12 with Macmillan.
I read that.
The Real Tin Flower, and Anne Sexton wrote an introduction, and you do bring in Paul.
There's a poem in that book called Beatles Dream, but I remember when Sgt. Pepper's came out, there was a whole theme breakthrough album. The LP cover folded out and it had all of the lyrics, and I would be listening to the music and Dad would be reading the lyrics. And they're amazing lyrics. Some of them really hold up as poems.
In some ways, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, it represented the surrealist moment which American and British poetry hardly ever had.
We were both really influenced by the Beatles and John Lennon, and I think it shows in a lot of my poetry. There's a particular poem in my recent book, Bright Body. It weaves in Beatle lyrics.
How about one of those poems that you just mentioned?
Okay. This is called In the Night Box. In the night box is a mess of interstates. In the glove box are the maps. Outside the car, the dark throbs like my headache. Mosquitoes and moths whack against yellow parking lot lights and buzz the car windows. They're tiny voices telling secrets, or they're faraway newscasters. Through the windshield kaleidoscope, I see my dad bend over the newspaper box in the truck stop foyer. Then he charms the girl as he orders coffee. I read the news today, oh boy. The Beatles float beside me in the front seat, and we sway together on humid airwaves. I love them almost as much as my dog. I'm just a girl, but I curl around their rubber sole. Somewhere on the earth is Vietnam. Radio comes from the sky's brain, and television is a box in its bad dream. We watch the war over plates of chicken rice and frozen peas. Soldiers run under helicopter blades, enormous spinning steak knives. Faces lolling on stretchers turn toward the camera's panic. Friday nights we read the names of the dead scrolling down the screen. The voice says, that's the way it is. Friends I played pretend with are teenagers sprawled on mattresses on the floor. In a few years, I want to be like them and smell of patchouli and making love, to turn the page that reads war, to be lazy-eyed among inky strokes. Well, I just had to look, having read the book, where I kissed time right on the lips with 1,000 voices around us, and everyone a fool throwing the guns and bombs down a big hole. The ranks of traffic hurled past. Headlight stars are not stars at all. Maybe people in cars aren't people. Their bodies are shadows in a box with no faces, no eyes. You can't even see the shadows of troops and trucks. Their night sky over this parking lot, a metallic blank glow, no color I can name. The war drives on every interstate across the globe, and my home is flimsy, just a box. Gunshots mock crickets and fireflies in our backyard. The gray-blue light of television blazes into every quiet dark and into my dreams where the soldiers' searchlights expose my translucent thighs. I can't run fast enough to stop seeing my lie. How can I wake up? How can I tell what is near or far when the TV taxi always waits to bear me away? My brothers sleep in the back seat, and my mother dozes against cool glass. My father keeps driving until dawn. A marmalade sky glazes the car, and all my dreams are still real.
That's the poem In the Night Box from the 2011 collection by Aliki Barnstone called Bright Body. And this is New Letters on the Air. We were talking about the Beatles, but your dad makes an appearance in that poem.
Mm-hmm, he does. He does. Well, what's interesting about it is that you can see so many of the influences in that poem, not just of the Beatles, but of my dad, because he's looking at the headlines in the newspaper. And one of the things that we talk about constantly is politics and social justice. And that has had a huge influence on my life, that my father has always been a person who really took into his heart and soul the suffering of others and has a very strong ethical base and has been unafraid to write about it in his poetry.
Well, Willis, you look posed there to read a poem. Do you have something picked out for us?
Since she writes about her dad, I can write about mine.
I bet you couldn't even count the number of poems you have about your father. He makes an appearance quite a bit, doesn't he?
Yes. My father was good at arithmetic, so he would be able to tell you how many. Well, I thought I'd read In Our Life Watch.
That's a great poem.
For those of you who don't know, you've heard a little bit about Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Pee Wee Reese. Well, when I was a kid, I went to see them at the games and the World's Fair. My father was an importer of Swiss watches, and my sister gave the name Pierre-Ange, which means stone barn, or in French, or barnstone. In our life watch, we are down to 5 or 6 Pierre-Ange watches, a jeweler's box of soft Swiss straps, and a few precious stones we are selling off to pay the Greystone hotel bill and meals. Dad and I leave early each morning on our rounds in the labyrinths of narrow jewelry stores downtown. How will we eat after our loot is gone? No worry, some way. I love this summer in New York, best in my life, not Camp Moden in Maine, with its daybreak lake and canoe trips, but real city watch shops with grown-up men we waylay and haggle with. On Sunday, we prowl Coney Island or the World's Fair. Dad was 12 when he left home and school. I'll soon be 12, and I've got my father as my closest pal. We celebrate each sale, each trade. One afternoon, with a twinkle, he slaps down $300 for a diamond, most of what we have left to live on. Next day, sells it for $1,000. He finds the way. Things get so good, we spend our Sundays watching Gehrig and DiMaggio knocking leather into the bleachers, or Pee Wee Reese catching the impossible. We miss the series when Dad goes west, but I grab wartime trains to meet him on our swinging life watch through Red Mountain States and Mexico adventures. In Mexico City, he marries a child bride, and I'm living with Spanish children from the Civil War in a barred-in orphanage where I share room on the roof. Then, too soon, Dad and I talk all night in our New York hotel. Lying on narrow beds, we conjure up Rembrandt's beggar in baggy nobleman's dress, how the Swedish angel wrestler hugs a foe till he drops inert. Then the hill of debts. Am I my father tonight? In the morning I leave for Maine. He's on a plane to Mexico, where he must pawn his soul for silver. No luck. He flies to Colorado, plays a last card at a Denver bank, loses. Van Gogh's faces against the wall. He climbs high to the roof, where he folds his coat, places it on a stone bench near the ledge, his hat on top. He steps over the low railing, leaps, and floats in blind sorrow out into May sun. Dad's fallen again. But we can't wake early and look up a small jewelry shop to peddle our wares and hearts, our soft Swiss straps or cold diamond, since death at last has cleaned us out.
In Our Life Watch, from the collection Life Watch by Willis Barnstone, and you're listening to him and his daughter Aliki Barnstone today on New Letters on the Air. Do you tend to read each other's works? I mean, before things are published?
Very much so.
We spent a long, long time with Life Watch, and I was pretty merciless.
Thank God.
It's such a good book. I wanted him to make every poem an absolute gem, and I also wanted him to cut quite a few things because I think that less is more. It has something to do with my idea of what a slim volume of contemporary poetry is like, and it's a form. I think that if it's much more than 130 pages, then the reader doesn't know what to make of it.
I actually think it's a very quick read, the book.
No, it's a great read.
I'm not saying it out of any vanity. It just somehow they flow quickly into one another, and they're sectioned nicely.
Well, I think there's an arc of a narrative, and I think that regardless of whether the poems are lyric or narrative or elliptical, there's always a narrative that goes along with the ordering of the poems.
About one-third of these poems I actually wrote in French.
Really?
And then translated them into English.
But why French?
I was a soldier in France for some years, and I was a graduate student from the age of 20 in Paris, got married in Paris. When I went to Greece with my family in law, I always spoke French because that was our common language. When I was in the army, I was reading novels night and day. And then a long time passed because you don't have a chance to speak much French in America. And I have been going back every now and then. And when I went back 10 years ago, I wrote my first poem on a houseboat. And that was it. For the next 2 years, I only read and wrote in French and did most of the book in the first 2 years and then added a few poems each year since then.
Wow.
But I also write in Spanish, not much. There are two poems in here in Spanish because from the age of 15, I was speaking Spanish. Mexican stepmother, professor of Spanish literature. I've published 7 poems in Italian.
I think it has something to do also with the amount of time that you've spent in translating from many different languages. And that's another influence. I was thinking about reading a poem that is not exactly a translation, but it comes out of my translation experience, and it became a sequence of poems in my new and selected.
Is this the imaginary poet
that you came up with?
Yes.
My friend Alan Michael Parker came up with the idea of doing a book called The Imaginary Poets, where we invented a poet and then wrote poems in the poet's name and wrote a biography for the poet and also wrote an essay about how the poet had influenced us, never letting on that we had invented this poet. And the interesting thing about inventing Eva Victoria Pereira, who was a Sephardic Jew from Thessaloniki and survived the Holocaust, was it was just like translating because she had a very specific voice. It was not my voice. And I couldn't write a poem in her voice that she didn't tell me to write. She became a real person and a real poet that speaks through me in the same way that when I translated Cavafy, Cavafy spoke through me. And there's a kind of accuracy with which you have to record that voice. But what happened with this particular poem, which is called Market Song, is that I had been reading a lot about Greek history because I was writing a particular moment in history. And then I went to the outdoor market and I heard all of the people calling out, Ella, 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 and call out, Ella Koritsakia, Domates, Domates, Kirias, Kirias, Kirias. And they go on and on like this. And I came home, and these voices were in my head, but then I translated them into English to write this poem.
Would you like to read that one?
All right. Market Song. Come on, ladies. Come on, girls. Come taste my olives, my little black pearls. Come on, buy greens from my fields. Hey, my eyes, hey, my soul, forget your grief. Everything's fresh, fresh, fresh. I've got arugula and spinach leaf, freesia, red lettuce, celery, parsley, basil, dill. I've got the best quality, hey, little girls, the best deals if you will buy from me. Wheel your cart over here, my sweetheart. Just pick today, 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 rosy grapes, black grapes, green grapes. Once we Greeks were slaves. Now we've escaped all that. Hey, lovely girls, look all so good. Once our lives in Greece were poor. Look here, fresh fruit right off the tree. Smell my oranges, my sweet pears, three kinds of apples, and sticky black figs. Come on, ladies, come on, good wives, come to my stall, look at all I have. Sharpest knives, mops, and brooms, coffee pots and socks, dustbins, dish towels and tablecloths, underwear, T-shirts, blouses, beautiful scarves. Hey, ladies, hey, girls, once all of us starved. And what did you eat today, and what will you cook? Come look, I have flowers, flowers, flowers. Come on, my golden one, my soul, my eyes. See these pinks in pots for your garden? They attract butterflies. Come take my flowers for your table. I pick them today, today, today. No more slaves, no more lies. Come on, darling, come on, my soul, eat my souvlaki hot from the coals. Listen, my sweethearts, my golden ones. Long ago, soldiers showed you their guns and took your jewels in the busiest city square. Hey, ladies, hey, little girls, today all's for sale in the open air.
That's called Market Song. It's in Ava's voice, Poems of an Imaginary Poet, a series of poems included in a Leakey Barnstone's collection, Dear God, Dear Dr. Heartbreak, New and Selected Poems, her 2009 book. This is New Letters on the Air. Was there a moment in time where, Willis, you recognized that she was a poet and you needed to listen to what she had to say too?
I did, because although I'm a little bit older than she is, she published her first book of poems with a trade company before I did, with Macmillan.
Oh, I hadn't even put the math
together.
So
I was the father of a Leakey Barnstone. And so, yes, we went to radio stations and TV for a Leakey, the star.
In high school, I remember you used to show me your poems.
Yeah, of course.
Because we were writing poems together when I was 19.
Like the one that we read to begin today.
Yeah, right.
Willis, at what point did you recognize Ina Leakey? Because she published her first book when she was 12.
She began to write seriously when she was about 8. I mean, those are the savable poems. And the poems which were in the book were those written between the age of 8 and 11.
I had a teacher when I was in the 3rd and 4th grade named Mrs. Macmillan, and I really wish I knew where she was so I could thank her for this, but she never had any art when she was growing up in elementary school, and so she wanted to give us art. And I actually have a poem, Days of 1964 in Bloomington, Indiana, which is about the first black child who was in our school in Bloomington in 1964. But at any rate, she had us painting and writing poetry, and she gave us a really wonderful little writing game where we wrote about colors. And so that was why I wrote Blue is Greece, which was my first poem that was ever published, and that was the poem that came out in Poetry Magazine, because she asked us to write about colors. And then I wrote a poem about white, and I wrote a poem about red, and I wrote a poem about purple. And then many years later, I discovered that Rambeau had also written about colors in his poem about the colors of vowels, you know, that poem.
It sounds like you guys are simpatico in the sense that you both get on a track and you really begin to explore it.
Right.
Willis, you've done many translations of parts of the Bible, Gnostic Gospels.
And... yeah. In 2009, I published a 1,500-page book, which is a translation of the complete New Testament, highly annotated, and I restored the Greek, Aramaic, and Hebrew proper nouns, that is, of all person and place. So it's everything that Jesus and most of Paul I put into verse, and all of Revelation in blank verse.
It's called the Restored New Testament.
I have a question about the way the two of you work, because Willis, you live in California.
Yeah.
And Aliki, you're in Columbia, Missouri now.
Yes.
But you're so far apart. So do you email your work to each other?
Yeah.
And I wait for the axe to fall. We help each other in the sense of making helpful comments. In other words, we have a formula. General praise and specific s***. I like aphoristic speech.
I've gathered that. It sometimes shows up in your poetry.
Dad writes so much, it's hard to comment on every single poem.
I know. Do you sleep much?
The answer is no. But the question has been asked to me so many times.
Well,
Ruth Stone,
I'm sure.
Said, does he ever sleep?
Well, I have a suggestion on how to end. This is from your 1996 collection of 501 sonnets called The Secret Reader. And there's one called My Daughter Heads Me to Felicity.
Okay, I'd love to read it. My daughter heads me to felicity. When the bad hour of climbing to the roof to float like father from the sun is lurking, however stupidly in mind, the proof of happiness is sound. For what is working deep in the cave is love. My daughter tells me wisely that the hour of happiness is here, and I agree. And then she spells it out, insisting that I not repress the pain. Cry if you can, though I'm ashamed of weakness and my sad and groveling plea for love. She wakes me free. I'm free. She's right, of course. I love her truth, not to be named by Adam, live or dead. And in my night, like sun, I float in strange felicity.
My Daughter Heads Me to Felicity by Willis Barnstone from his collection of 501 sonnets called The Secret Reader. We also heard from his book, Night Watch, A Circle of 91 Nights. Since this 2011 conversation, he's published the poems of Jesus Christ, while his daughter, Aliki Barnstone, was named the Missouri Poet Laureate in June 2016. We heard today from two of her books, Bright Body and Dear God, Dear Dr. Heartbreak. You can get a free issue of New Letters magazine featuring recent works by Aliki or Willis with our summer subscription special. For details, go to our website, newletters.org, and look under News, or call us toll-free, 888-548-2477. That's 888-LIT-AIRS. Your station also has this information. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. Today's show was originally produced with Stephanie Hughes, Annie Walsh, and Dennis Conroe. Thanks also to Nick Shea and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.